All right. This episode is going to be kind of a one-off. It is technically live from Kaleidoscope Coffee here on Athens Avenue in Reading, which I am want to do at times. There have been a lot of logistical challenges for me to get a podcast written out or studied or woodshedded, whatever you want to call it. But that's because I've also had to flex some other muscles with regards to podcast publicity. And I'm going to explain what those things are. It is primarily a social media presence. For those of you that do follow me on Instagram, thank you. And if you don't, just simply do the little at symbol and type the words box number 7. No hashtags, no numerals, just spell the words out from left to right, box number 7, and you'll find me that way. You can do it on TikTok as well. I'm not mentioning Facebook because, quite frankly, I hate Facebook to a granular level. As a matter of fact, I also don't like Mark Zuckerberg for most reasons, not just because he looks like a chemically face-peeled cyborg, but because there is something that squelches the essential nature of publicity if you're trying to do any of your own. Now, I realize that possibly TikTok does that, but people make money off TikTok. I'm watching 18-year-old kids make $30,000 a month by being TikTok shop affiliates and things like that, and that's not my goal, but I do know that in order to do that, you have to have some degree of visibility that TikTok allows you. And the same with Instagram. I see plenty of people that are focusing on TikTok and Instagram, but there's just something essentially, well, let's just put it this way. If I stub my toe on a sewer grate and I post a picture of some, you know, bruised, mal-aligned digit on my right foot, I'll get 650 likes and 2,800 comments, and it's absolutely insane. But if I have a show coming up and I spend hours on Photoshop making a poster for one of my sleight-of-hand shows or one of my theatrical presentations, I could put that thing up on the wall and put it up on the wall on Facebook, and I can do it every day for 2 months, pushing my ticket sales and things. And people that would have responded to the broken toe meme and then follow-up responded and then hearted it and then liked it and possibly shared it and proclaimed what a whimsical friend I am and what have you will never see the post about my show. And then I'll run into them in the store and they'll go, "You have any shows coming up?" And I'm like, "You're not seeing any of this, are you?" So, as I said, I do realize that Facebook and Instagram and TikTok are all three platforms that you do not have to pay for in order to use. But there is something particularly malignant about Facebook. And I don't care what adjustments he said he's made, Mark Zuckerberg, I don't believe him. And it has been, on a personal social level, Facebook has been great for any form of visibility that that might have the possibility of an economic benefit, even in the slightest. I don't know if Facebook senses that I'm going to make two pennies off of a transaction. They just simply make sure that only 2 to 3 people even bother to see the post. So that's kind of a long rant about the social media conundrum, but that is none the case what it is. All right, so going forward here, I'm hoping the sound is good on this. So as far as social media goes, I realize that the podcast itself is a pretty dry-sounding podcast at this point. Now, that's because for something that's going to run 20, 30 minutes at a time, it's kind of hard to infuse it with music and fancy stuff since I am a one-man operation. However, that doesn't stop me from doing what I need to do for promotional levels on TikTok and Instagram. So here comes a car. Hello, car. Goodbye, car. I have entered the TikTok world and attempted to catch with a breathless attempt, the millennial faction of the world that has mastered CapCut. And I realize there's 9-year-old kids that have CapCut on their phone, and they can probably edit a cinematic-grade movie on their iPhone 14 if they wanted to. But I had to work at it for a few hours before I figured out the thing. And I don't do it on my phone. I do it on my laptop. But I have created a couple of promos, one of which was just simply a promo explaining my show, and that kind of goes like this. Ever since I was a kid, I've been fascinated with the mysteries, secret codes, and the more esoteric aspects of the world around me. And when it occurred to me that history was the perfect discipline, and quite frankly, also an excuse to study all of these things, I was off to the races. So I've taken that fascination and I've galvanized it into a short-form podcast called Box Number 7, named after the balcony in which President Abraham Lincoln would spend the last sentient moments of his life in Ford's Theater, April 14th, 1865. Come with me as we look out over the theater of history. My name is Ron Giesick, and this is Box Number 7. All right, so if you are on TikTok or Instagram, there's video enhancement to go along with that. It's mostly still photos, very cleverly edited with those requisite sound effects and those whoosh noises and all the things that make a video cool. You know, Twitch effects and things. And it's all in CapCut. And I am not doing a commercial for them. I'm certainly not endorsed by them. But if they ever wanted to, well, you know, at some point, I'm gonna want a couple of products and people that I really, really like. It would be great if they climb on board with the believability index in terms of what I'm doing. That being said, I have made a few. So I went back through some of my old shows, and I made promos that are appearing on TikTok and on Instagram that lead people back to my podcast as well, hopefully to gin up interest. And so what I had to do was go back and write a quick synopsis of the show that I had done. For instance, the recent episode I did about Arthur Conan Doyle and Houdini, culminating a friendship that, oddly enough, centered around their competing interests or lack of belief in the supernatural, but how it was ultimately destroyed. And that promo sounds like this.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle achieved nearly all his notoriety from the creation of the ubiquitous Sherlock Holmes, a detective devoid of sentimentality or spirituality, and certainly brooked no room for the possibility of the supernatural. Holmes's character completely belied his author, who openly professed a profound belief in ghosts, fairies, and even the ability to speak with the dead. Harry Houdini gained his fame by the replication of things supernatural, a theatrical presentation meant for entertainment with no claims of metaphysical power. And yet, in real life, he was a skeptic of all he imitated. These two men would form a unique friendship, but it would be ultimately destroyed when a séance meant to convince became a fraudulent bridge too far. See why at Box Number 7.
Anyway, you get the idea, but I'll play you one more, and it's just because I guess I do have a voice for this, at least when I'm not having to clear my throat all the time. And, you know, that's the great part about recording commercials. You can keep going until you get it right. But I just did the recent Babe Ruth episode, which, by the way, is getting decent traffic. And I think it's a combination of the fact that it is a local story to where we are in Northern California. But secondarily, there is something about Babe Ruth. As a matter of fact, that show engendered a desire for someone to send me a photograph, and they know who they are. I'm not going to say who they are. They texted me a photograph of a of a baseball that was recently acquired in their family as an inheritance, and it turns out it is an authenticated baseball signed very clearly and legibly by Mr. Babe Ruth, the Sultan of SWAT, the great Bambino. Anyway, I cut a promo for that, and not to drive you out of your mind listening to back-to-back promos, but just go ahead and take a listen at this one and tell me if you don't think at least, I at least have this thing down a little bit.
In 1924, Major League Baseball was still reeling from scandalous insider corruption charges from the World Series. Two members of the New York Yankees, Babe Ruth and Bob Musil, convinced a skittish baseball commissioner to let them tour the West Coast by train, playing exhibition games with local teams. The comparatively anonymous mountain town of Dunsmuir, California, would become the flashpoint for a sea change in the public temperature, with disproportionately large media coverage. Two home runs, two broken bats, and a long-term relationship would be forged between a notched-in mining town and the great Bambino. Come find out at box number 7.
Okay, so on the publicity end of things, I've also had some publicity, brought my way in a couple of ways. I'd first like to thank Reading Buzz. It is what he would refer to you as a hyper-local city promotional website aggregator. And I know that word isn't used all the time except in print. It doesn't mean to aggravate people. It means to gather and centralize information and focus. But he is a wildly successful local promoter, promulgator, and I just want to thank Jason Stovall at Reading Buzz for not only promoting me on his social media, but also having me on a couple of times now as a guest on the Chamber of Commerce radio show on local station KCNR AM radio. I've also picked up a number of followers. I managed to have a couple of oddball videos go reasonably viral on TikTok, if you call, I don't know, headed for 40,000 views viral, I don't know, but picked up about 60 followers in the last 3 days on there, which is great. The idea is to get up to an amount that really is out of 10, 20,000 followers that you're hoping that a strong percentage, even if it's a small one, a 10% of that is somebody that actually has a dedicated interest in listening to the podcast itself. Now, I know a lot of you have listened to this podcast from the beginning, and so you've actually seen my evolution from the name of it being changed from Woolly Swamp Radio to Box Number 7, and the explanatory background for that. And then I had a conversation with a friend who I can talk about his podcast here. It's Andy over at Let's Not Meet. So if you are a podcasty person and you're into the true crime / horror / quietly and contemplatively read account, you are in good company over there. They are a really great website. I have two benefits that have come from that. One is back channel conversation with Andy, just who helped me to just a simple piece of advice told me to focus. When you talk to somebody that's successful at what they do, it's good to listen to even the tiny chunks of advice, because sometimes that could be the biggest piece of advice and you don't even realize it. So that's what actually caused me to narrow my focus to something historical and intriguing. I add the intrigue tab to this because while I am a history podcast, I want to maintain the ability to, I don't know, find the trivially intriguing moment, and everything kind of has a moment in time, and so I could really talk about anything I want and put it within the historical context, and that's what I want to do. I wanted to be less speculative and less opinion, so I would rather discuss what and when, and a combination of what and when, as opposed to why. Now, I realize I get into why. Like, if you listen to the Georgia Guidestones episode, you'll realize that I got into the why. And I guess in some ways I flesh out my own personal irritations about things, too. I try not to make it an opinion thing here. I'm certainly not making this a political podcast. If you want politics, there's plenty of it, and you can overdose on it till your heart's desire. I don't care. And the older I get, the less balkanized I am. I am convinced that no one good is in charge. So Andy focused my thinking about the nature of the focus of the podcast, but he also put one of my stories up the other day. He probably didn't know I saw it, but he put me up on he just shared a story. I think it was an episode story, and I any help anyone gives, and so I have people that are following me on Instagram that have maybe 10 followers themselves, and I also have. This is really strange, and it is a testament to the strange life I have. I have a number of blue checks on there too, from a number of walks of life in general, and musical life, and podcast life. And again, it's every single listener, every single supporter is on an equal playing field here. So let's talk about maybe just some upcoming material that I'm going to discuss. And how does this go through my head? Well, it literally comes down to childhood fascination of things. And I know I discussed this. Hello, car, and goodbye, car. My dad was an intrepid subscriber to Reader's Digest when I was growing up, and it was always kind of a heartwarming touchstone. It was kind of a rallying point. It was a place of comfort even for me as a kid, because it had the same expectations and the same sections in it every year. It had little short stories. It had a section called Life in These United States, and it had Laughter, the Best Medicine, and then it had another section called Humor in Uniform. And as far as I know, they still maintain those particular structures within the context of Reader's Digest. I'd like to thank my friend Michael for siphoning off a free subscription my way when he signed up for one of his. It gave him the offer to give it away. It did show up in large print, so it does appear to the mailman that Mr. Magoo, who needs glasses to see Alpha Centauri, needs to read it. But thank you, Mr. Spangler. All right, so, but my dad, because he was this intrepid subscriber, I believe that Reader's Digest sent him a gift, and it was a book that still continues to pay dividends to me to this day. It's called Strange Stories and Amazing Facts, and it is presented and formatted in a way that is still draws my eye, and I literally pick it up even to this day, and I look through it for inspirational ideas. And I could literally probably make an episode out of each thing and out of that book and expand on each point just from the book alone and carry on for probably 5 years of material. I'm not going to do that, but I do look at it, and every now and then I get ideas out of that book. And because these are things that have lingered in my still adolescent mind, I'm 58, but my mind isn't, at least it doesn't feel like it very often. And so some ideas come from that, but some of it just comes from things that have lingered in my subconscious for years, or I get those what if questions in my head and just decide that's what it's going to be. So I've got, I could just tell you, it's kind of a broad range of things. It does seem like lately I have been focusing on the popes, on the Vatican. It does seem like that I gravitate toward the structural interests of Catholic history and symbolism and tradition. And I like to say, I have to kind of tell people, because they go, well, you're, because I've had somebody ask me, I don't remember, it was a bit, they go, are you Catholic? And I'm not. But I will say that in terms of subject matter, there is a lot to work with. And I don't mean that as a dig. I mean that as they have a very, very strategically recorded history, and they have long-held ceremonial rites and rituals, if you, I guess that's the right word, especially, and so even in movies, right? In fact, this is going to be one of my things. When it comes to the subject of exorcisms, right? You'll notice in cinema that you don't have Benny Hinn exorcising demons. You don't have, any of the evangelically visible bigwigs or people that appear to be them involved in these movies where some Georgetown girl has played with a Ouija board. She's talking about consulting with Captain Howdy, and she's throwing up in the living room in front of dinner guests, and it turns into a giant demonic mess. It's always the Catholic priest that is brought in as the intermediary to deal with this. Now, is this because there's an extraordinary amount or a disproportionate amount of people dealing with that subject only in the Catholic world? No. But they're the ones who wrote down a series of steps. They're the ones that have provided at least in terms of cinema and storytelling, they at least provide the structural linchpins to tell a story. And so it's kind of natural. And it's in terms of cinema and storytelling, there is a visual line between, I don't know how I got on this. This is insane. This is going to be an insane podcast. When you look visibly, you have the disheveled, fulminating, cursing specter possessed by, you know, Legion, Beelzebub, Belial, whoever, and you have the priest, the man who is at least wearing the clerical garments of that appear to draw a line of separation. And I think it is, I think separation, at least the appearance of it, is something that easily drives storytelling narratives. But I say all this because I am going to, in hopefully fairly short order, I'm going to get into the story of Annalise Michel, who is, or Michelle, I don't have her last name completely down here, but she is the, if you will, the protagonist. It doesn't really fit, but in a way it does, for the movie that attempted to tell her story called The Exorcism of Emily Rose. And yes, it is based on a true story. And the girl is a devout Catholic who died at 23 from, if you listen to the courts and medical professionals, it was epileptic psychosis and emaciation and ultimately starvation. If you listen to the clerics, it was because she was inhabited by six entities, and yeah. So, but her story is sad, and it is endearing, and when you find out her motivations and her personality, your heart goes out to her. either way. And it's going to be based on a book written by a non-theologically inclined person who's, I wish she were still alive, but Felicitas Goodman, who wrote a book called The Exorcism of Emily Rose. But she was some clinically diagnostic person who takes a very up-the-middle view of what happened to Annalise. And I believe, if I remember right, she passed away in 76. So I was like 9 years old at the time, which is weird to think when you look at a picture of this beautiful young lady that she would be, what, 13 years older or 12 years older than me. So she'd basically be a 70-year-old woman had she lived. It's the whole thing is just everything is surreal. I'm not going to just linger in those weird, metaphysically odd and somewhat uncomfortable places. I got a lot of other things to talk about. We got a lot of local things to talk about here. In September, at least, this is the date, and I already have the episode written, but Expedition Unknown with Josh Gates is going to be, I believe, premiering. And I don't have an official word on this, that it's going to be a premiere, but he came out and he filmed an episode about the infamous Northern California lynching of two brothers, John and Charles Ruggles, who in 1892 robbed a Wells Fargo stagecoach on Blue Cut. It was basically on Middle Creek Road, just outside of town here. And one got away. They killed a bank guard. And anyway, long story short, they wound up in the jail here. And the local men, who were really, really, really not impressed that the local women began to make romantic petitions with food and marriage proposals. And you can, well, factor in the jealousy factor and the lack of tolerance for a couple of killer criminals who were also wanting to frame an innocent man as a co-conspirator, and it didn't work out well for them. But it was actually something that made huge headlines here. It was a huge flashpoint. It made the New York Times. I mean, when a little Northern California town, even in 1892, is making the old gray lady back in 1892, and it's getting there by telegraph very, very quickly, it was quite a story. And it was look, nation's history being what it is, and lynchings were still happening. And as a matter of fact, I did happen to see where there was one that had happened back in Georgia. This was one that had zero due process involved. But the fact that these two killers here were captured, and there was an entire element of due process that had already been enacted, and it was not the South, it was an East Coast state. When it happened, it made news, and people were starting to worry whether there was like a swoon, a viral tendency towards mob justice that was spreading outward from the southern states and so on. Anyway, I'm going to be doing one on the Ruggles brothers. We're doing one on Annalise Michelle. I'm going to be doing one on a secondary place of intrigue that you can't go to, and neither can I, but people that are listening have been there, that was owned by William Randolph Hearst. It's up here in Northern California, particularly not too far from Mount Shasta. I'm going to be doing... I'm probably going to be revisiting the Daryl Rich killings here, even though I talked about them indirectly when I was talking about Georgia Ann Rule's untimely murder, death, and completely unsolved crime. And so I'll be going into that. There's going to be just a lot of little tiny stuff. And I'm also going to be adding this moment in musical history. There is a lot of intriguing things in the music world. Some of them are anecdotal stories. Some of them have to do with conspiratorial. But, well, here's an example. The Paul McCartney is dead. thing that happened during the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band era. That rabbit hole alone, if you have never been down it, is a fun one as long as you don't spend miles down the rabbit hole. And so that's what I try to do, is I'm trying to cut this show up the middle, where I essentially siphon off the majority of the high point details of something that give you enough structure to at least be able to recount the story. And then if you want to go into it and plunge down 18 subterranean tunnels with your headlamp on, like, and spelunk from place to place, that part's up to you. And many times I have done it. I just don't want to overcomplicate the show with that. But music intrigue. As a matter of fact, the two things that are viral currently of mine on TikTok are both, I didn't realize it, but they both had to do with music, and both of them had to do with something intriguing. One is the more widely known concept that, and this is something, and man has it caused debate in my TikTok feed, which is great, but it has to do with the Eagles, and particularly their very mystically calibrated album Hotel California, which tells a story. It has possibly one of the most intoxicating chord progressions I've ever heard. It's weird. It's just, I mean, if you know your music, it goes from like B minor to F sharp 7, up to A, down to E, then to G, D, I think to E minor, and then back to F sharp 7. And it circles around all the verses circle through that chord progression. And then it goes, I think, up to G and D for the chorus. But the whole point is that the song is very, very clearly a metaphor for something. And one of those is that the Eagles, I believe Don Henley has, at least he's anecdotally been quoted, that during one of his lesser salubrious periods of life, that he spent time in Camarillo Mental Hospital, probably on a bender of some kind. But I don't know that one, but he has been stated that Hotel California is metaphorical for the trap of drug addiction. It's also been known to be the... something that the salacious and hedonistic world of Hollywood, and absolutely, if you listen to that song, it could very well be that. And as we go along and we see, now this is me speculating with opinion, but when you look at the what's happened to everyone from Britney Spears to Justin Bieber, and if you're not aware, that both of them are in the middle of absolutely maddeningly obvious psychological breakdowns, and there is speculation that this has to do with people wrestling for control of their livelihoods and their careers and their catalogs, and I've even heard a couple of speculatory things about that Michael Jackson, weird as he was, odd as he was not a pedophile, and that he was set up with that accusation to bring him down. And all three of these people all wound up with these type of degrading conditions after they've attempted to break away from their controlling, the parameters of the controlling companies, entities, whatever you want to call it, LLCs, record companies. You know, Prince was talking about the evils of record companies so long ago. But Hotel California, that's one of the metaphorical takeaways of it. The other was that during the period of time in which that song was written, they, like a lot of people, to include Jane Mansfield, to include Sammy Davis Jr., to include the majority of people at Studio 54 in Hollywood, if you don't know about that, I probably won't be doing a show on that because it was such a debauched place to go, but it was a place where Hollywood people consorted and, let's just say, engaged transactionally, probably to the detriment of their souls. But that being said, Anton LaVey, the author of the Satanic Bible, the founder of the Church of Satan, he's long, long gone now. He was a definite rallying point for publicity. His newfound Church of Satan, which was at his home on California Street in San Francisco, was a place to be seen, and he had a definite publicity high point. And the Eagles managed to, in their weird and varied spiritual journeys of peyote and mysticism, managed to make his acquaintance. And so, when you open up the inside of the record album, what they call the the inside of the record album. There's another word for it, and I can't think of it right now. But the Eagles are standing in the middle of a hotel lobby. It turns out it's called the Lido Apartments in Southern California, in Los Angeles. And they're standing there with a bunch of other people, and they said that the people that they're standing with, the Eagles are lit up. They're more illuminated. The rest of the people are kind of in twilight or in darkness. But up on the balcony, there appears to be a man with a goatee, Fu Manchu, and a shaved head, and it does appear at the outset to be Anton LaVey, but it's very blurry and very vague, and there had been speculation that they were also writing about the Church of Satan, because the third verse is absolutely a metaphor for a black mass, or at least the ceremonial pantomimes of a black mass. And so that speculation, whether you agree with it or not, I think that you could stretch all three or four metaphors over that song and have them be equally accurate. But is it fun to talk about? It absolutely is, especially since my musical history is very, very deep, and my fascination with band history, my fascination with all of that is immense. That one kind of, and so all I did was post a still photo of the insert on TikTok with this. It says, "When you realize what the phrase 'such a lovely face' was meant to indicate," and I put it up there, and now it's headed for 40,000 views and debate, and a lot of people are going, "It doesn't mean that, you religious fanatic," and blah blah. And my thing is every comment, no matter what they do, I like everybody's comment. Even if they don't like me, I like their comment because they're contributing. Okay, so you're going to hear that I just literally did a cut-in edit right here because I was just starting to ramble. And I went back and listened, and I did another 10 minutes of just talking about why I'm doing it. So let me just go a couple other previews. I'll go down a quick list here, super quick explanation, and then... And then I'm gonna get out of here, and I'm gonna work on a genuine episode here. So, up north, I was gonna talk about the Hearst Castle thing. It's called Wintoon. There's also a 1985 incident that happened on Half Dome where lightning struck. Lightning actually strikes it every month of the year, but there was a particular incident that happened there that has some real storytelling. Value to it. There's obviously the Antarctic or the North Pole. Which one was it? I think it was Antarctica. Robert Falcon Byrd expedition. Those men actually died there in the ice, and their diaries were found later. I said Darryl Rich. I'm going to talk about my favorite book, The Innocents Abroad, which is one of the first worldwide published travel novels written by Mark Twain, and my personal favorite book. I'm looking around for a first edition copy of that book. It's not as expensive as some of them, for sure. There's the Ruggles brothers. I already talked about Emily Rose. There's Black Bart, not the pirate, but the famous stagecoach robber, who was apparently a gentleman and never fired a shot. I'm going to go into the book Catcher in the Rye, which I read, which is just, I never read it when I was a kid, and I just read it a few months ago, and that's a strange, strange book, and apparently serial killers have some fascination with it. It shows up in the bibliographical acumen of everyone from John Hinckley Jr. to... what's his name? Can't think of the guy that shot John Lennon right now. But there's going to be Deadwood, South Dakota, and the legend surrounding Wild Bill Hickok and the accursed poker hand, the aces and eights, and then a secondary discussion of what the fifth card could have been, since there's speculation. No one seems to know what that card was. C.S. Lewis planting astronomical and planetary information in the Chronicles of Narnia, and you don't even know he did it. And then there's going to be a section on the history of frivolous lawsuits. There's going to be a whole legal aspect to this. I found out that a guy in my own county in the 1980s attempted to sue himself in court, believe it or not. All right, so we're looking at kind of a broad variety of things, and probably my next show will be none of these things that I listed, because something's going to come along and it's going to pop into my head and I'm not going to know how to do anything other than just do it. So anyway, I'm sorry for the completely schizoid episode and the long ramble today, and probably a lot of ums, and I'm too lazy to go edit out the ums. You know, there's a lot of that. Jump cuts are the thing today to make yourself look like you're snappy and on the edge, especially with video. And I get it, but there's a lot of people I listen to, a lot of video YouTube podcasts that I watch, and they use a lot of jump cuts because what they do is that they record their thought and they get a good take on it. Then they record their next thought and they get a good take, but realize that the interstitial period between those two takes is absolutely horrible and unrefined. So they just cut out all the oatmeal filler and then they put it together, and it does look good. And it does in this day and age where we have short attention spans and quasi-schizophrenic ability to move and doom scroll and everything we do, that probably is the way forward. Just this particular one, I'm just trying to be more of a take a campfire moment to talk to you that listen and tell you how much I absolutely appreciate you. Please find me on Instagram, especially Instagram. TikTok is going to be its own monster, and I'm hoping so. Instagram is kind of where my listeners will arrive, probably after knowing about me. TikTok is what's going to deliver listeners without knowing about me, because they found some, you know, potentially idiotic thing that I posted that suddenly will get 22 million views or something like that. Each one of these machines is fascinatingly different, but I don't know. It seemed like there was something else I wanted to say, but I can't think of it. But I apologize for the late episode. Thank you for listening. I've got to stop right now. I have to go edit in my my promo audio that you've already listened to by the time you've heard this, and we're going to get out of here. So I know I didn't use any intro music, but I'll go ahead and throw the intro music on the end. So thank you, everyone. Take care. Love you all. And this is box number 7.